You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Welcome along to William Hill's Boxing Podcast. Steve Bunce is with me, Lee Phelps, to have a look through a very, very busy weekend of boxing. Obviously a sad week in the world of boxing, Buncey. Yourself and Matt Costello had talked about it on your BBC podcast, a very emotional look back at last weekend. But as is the business, it just rolls on and we've got a stacked cards all weekend and we'll have big audiences watching on TV and at the venues.
And it's at the moment, it's a ridiculous business. I mean, there's unparalleled numbers of fights taking place in Britain, boxers in those fights, and more than that, TV. My calculation, Lee, and I'll give you this stat now. This weekend, three different channels in Great Britain will show five different fights, five different shows from around the world. Perhaps as many as about 20 live fights on one weekend's worth of boxing, including a world heavyweight title fight, including arguably the best light heavyweight in the world right now, one of the top five fighters in the world, the return of Kell Brook, the best prospect in a man called Josh Taylor. It's unbelievable. And in the UK, I think there are nearly 100 fights taking place on about nine different shows. If it isn't a record, it's got to be close to a record. These are incredible days.
Yeah, indeed. And obviously our thoughts here at William Hill go out to the family, friends and colleagues of Scott Westgarth as well. A tragic end to that boxer's life. Buncey, you mentioned the Channel 5 show there. It's one of the lopsided fights this weekend. Josh Taylor, you mentioned there, 1 to 100 Josh Taylor to beat Winston Campos. No chance of an upset there?
No, there's no chance of an upset there. It's a replacement. Campos is, you know, a seasoned old campaigner. The original fight was much, much better, although I don't think the odds would have been, it still would have been quite wide. It's about Josh Taylor just carry on winning, carry on ticking over, learning something new in theory from these old hands before he steps up and moves on. But you're right, everything I said at the top of the show needs an asterisk next to it because of those sort of nearly 100 fights, Lee. I've got to be honest with you, I think it's quite easy to predict at least about 95 of them. Now, again, is that good or bad? At least there's shows taking place, I would argue. And the devil on my left shoulder says, yeah, but everyone knows who's going to win. My devil on the right shoulder says, yeah, but people are going to go and watch fights. And the devil on the left shoulder says, yes, but they know who's going to win. Hey-ho, that's for another debate. Yeah. Josh Taylor's a terrific fighter. It's great he's getting exposure on terrestrial television. And hopefully he'll do it in three or four rounds, because that's what you should do when you're 1 to 100, correct?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And we have got some other prices around. So you can have the group betting, you can have the round-by-round betting. Taylor to win by stoppage is 1 to 6. So obviously that makes a big difference to you, 1 to 100 if you're looking for an acca.
Yeah.
On that same card, you've also got Jason Easton versus Glenn Foote, which is a Commonwealth super lightweight title fight. A little bit closer on the betting there. So all these prices are available on the app and williamhill.com. Let's go to the Sky Bill next, shall we, Buncey? We've got this looks a cracker before we get on to Kell Brook's fight. Gamalia Fai versus Gavin McDonnell.
Best fight of the weekend.
Yeah, it looks an absolute belter, this one, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Sheffield Arena for the WBC International Super Bantamweight title. McDonnell 18-1 and 2. Your Fai 14-0. It's mouthwatering. 2-7, your Fai, which I thought was a little short. Gavin McDonnell is 13-5. The draw 25-1. Again, we've got betting for the individual rounds and how it'll finish. How does this one go, Buncey?
Draw's not a bad one. I mean, I think it goes long. I think it goes a distance. McDonnell last year lost very tight decision in a world title fight to a good champion. I think he was out in Monaco about last February. So it's your Fai obviously looking to move on, get close to where his brother Khalid is, obviously a world champion. I think it's a terrific fight. I think it's a really, really tight fight. At least those odds suggest that. This one stands out, doesn't it? This stands out, in my opinion, apart from which we'll talk about in a moment, Wilder and Ortiz. This one stands out. I think it's a really tight fight. I think it goes the distance. I don't mind the draw. I just fancy. Yafai on point. I wouldn't be at all surprised if it's debated and it's disputed, but I fancy Yafai on point.
Yeah, Fire & Points is priced up at 11-8. So decent enough price, that one. We're talking about all these odds-on shots this weekend, but there's a nice odds-against shot there, and you get a good run for your money on that one. Kell Brook back in action against Sergei Rebchenko. Of course, once looked after by Ricky Hatton. So we've seen a fair amount of Sergei Rebchenko and a good fight here. Super welterweight. Kell Brook's 1-16. The draw 33-1, and Sergei Rebchenko is 8-1. Again, loads of markets around here. It's fascinating, this, isn't it, Buncey? Kell Brook, one of my favourite fighters over the last, the last decade or so, and all the skills in the world, all the potential in the world. And at times during his career, you thought he just needs to take that extra step, and he could be an absolute world beater. The last year obviously hasn't been easy for him. Well, going back to 2016, actually, the Triple G fight, wasn't it? Then Errol Spence Jr. You and Costello talked about this on the BBC podcast about physically, he'll always be fantastic. If you're having a bet on this, you really need to know, and especially if you're having a bet at those sort of prices, 1-16, you really need to know that Kell Brook's mind is in the right place after the injuries that he's suffered, the out-of-the-ring problems that he's had as well. I mean, you look back at his career, Buncey, and the injuries that he's accumulated and the length of time that he's actually been in the game. You know, you mentioned yourself that he could be deemed as being an old man in terms of time in the game, not his age at all.
Well, he won the British title in 2008. So basically, he won the British title 10 years ago. He's only 31, if I'm not mistaken. Now, it's been a hard old run for Kell, from starting off earning £300. That's what he made in his first fight against a guy called Peter Buck, who went on to have 300 fights. He belongs to a different era, a different time, and worked his way, finally won the world title overseas 2014. Great win against Sean Porter, who I think was unbeaten at the time. That was a brilliant win. And he was an underdog in that. Not a massive underdog, but a mild underdog, certainly with the Americans, who dismiss every single British fighter, no matter who they are. And that was good. Then the three defences that meant nothing, but hey-ho, he got a few quid. Then, of course, there was that savage attack when he could have died. And then the big risk gaining a stone, Golovkin, then the coming back down, losing a stone to fight Spencer, lost both of those, damaged his left and right cheeks and orbital sockets. So we're not sure at 31 what Kell's got left. Rebchenko let everybody down, including Ricky Hatton, when he went to America and basically didn't fancy a fight against an American kid. And by the way, I'm just going to dig up the kid's name here. Tony Harrison, didn't fancy it. Now, Tony Harrison himself hasn't fancied it in other fights. So that was a strange old thing. That was a bit of a test of heart there. And he didn't really come through in very good shape, to be perfectly honest with you. So Rebchenko's 32, lost a couple now, but that was the most important defeat. And so a half-decent Kell, a Kell that's motivated, I think we'll get to him and stop him sometime around about 7 or 8. And I tell you why I think Kell will do that, because Kell's looking at one or two things. He's got the calm fight out there. More than that, there's other world champions at light middleweight. This fight's up at light middleweight. So it's not at middleweight and it's not down at welterweight. It's in the middle where he probably should have been 2 and a bit years ago. I fancy Kell. I fancy him to... I think Rebchenko's made for him, to be perfectly honest. He's a perfect opponent, though. This is not he's not been undermatched. He's a perfect opponent on paper. And I think Kell will get to him. I think Kell will stop him in that 6-7-8 margin. And I think he'll look good doing it. And then they'll start talking about Khan, who no doubt will be ringside or on a satellite link from San Francisco. Then they'll start talking about the other world champions. And we're back in the Kell Brook business. That is assuming his head's right. And I think his head will be right. I think he's made of different stuff, Kell Brook. I think ice runs through his veins, to be perfectly honest with you. Forget the smiling and the joking and the fact that he's such a nice guy. I think he's a really serious and potentially unpleasant fighter, and I mean that in the nicest possible way. So I fancy Kell, fancy him in that 6-7-8 mark, and then I fancy him moving on.
Yeah, Kell Brook rounds 4-6 is 7-2. Rounds 7, 8, or 9 is 100-30. You can have any individuals, and just to win by stoppage is 8-15. So I'm putting together a little accumulator here while you're going through these bunches. So I think that 8-15 is a nice one to stick in there. It was decent. Let's go overseas, as well as the Channel 5 card, as well as the Sky card. Box Nation are showing Sergei Kovalev, latest fight. Yes, against
Klasha to you.
Igor Makhalkin, whose record, his record reads 21-1. He lost way back in 2010 to Alexei Kuzmiemski. Decent opponent, but I mean, it shouldn't have any bother here. Buncey, Kovalev is 1-20, the draw 28-1, Mikhalkin is 8-1. Is this just when it finishes?
Yeah, I think it is about when it finishes. Although what happens is Eastern European, sometimes a little bit of pride comes out. Sometimes, a little bit of pride comes out. A little bit of old entities come out. I think these guys fought each other when they were about 12 or something ridiculous like that. And I'm not kidding. No, I'm deadly serious. In like the Trans-Siberian Youth Championships. I mean, I kid you not. You know, these guys all rock up 200, 300, 400 amateur contests. They actually don't remember who they fought.
No.
They genuinely don't remember who they fought. That's the way it works. You know, it's not, you know, no one's keeping meticulous records when they're 12 and 13. Golovkin has no idea who he fought when he was 11, 12 and 13. You fancy Kovalev because he's Kovalev. But other Eastern Europeans sometimes create a few problems, create a few hazards. So you're not at all surprised if Kovalev goes a distance, but equally you're not at all surprised if we see a different Kovalev. And, you know, a guy that wants to get the business done. There's some big fights out there. In fact, there's a guy called Dmitry Bivol, I think, who's defending his title on the same card, his version of the light heavyweight world title. Then there's a guy called Artur Beterbiev. So there's three, basically, Eastern European light heavyweight champions. Forget Adonis Stevenson. No one knows what he's doing. He shows signs that he's losing the plot, to be perfectly honest with you. So I think Kovalev will want to look good. I don't think he'll settle for an off night and points, and I think he might go for it. It wouldn't be at all surprised if he gets to him quite quick, but it'll be a bit of a struggle until then.
Yeah, again, I'm going to stick that in as just a stoppage because we're building up a nice little acca here. So Kovalev by a TKO, KO or disqualification, and we'll wrap this up, Buncey, with arguably, you know, the fight that we're all probably all looking forward to seeing, and because of the heavyweight scene at the minute, you wouldn't necessarily in the past the Deontay Wilder fight maybe wouldn't have whet the appetite, but now we know what's on the horizon with some of the British heavyweights. Wilder versus Luis Ortiz is an absolute cracker. 1-3 Wilder, the draw 28-1. Ortiz 23-10. Ortiz is 28-0. The Cuban who resides in Miami these days. Got some decent names on his record. We've seen him in action over the years. Maybe never quite reached the highlights. And this is his major opportunity here to fight Deontay Wilder. 39-0, 38 KOs. What a fight this is. There'll be fireworks, Buncey. That's one thing you can say. You can't imagine this one being a tippy-tappy 12-round contest, can you?
No, not at all. I can't imagine it being a 4-round tippy-tappy contest. There's been some sneak footage of Ortiz training, and it looks like he's shed fat because he's 38 years of age. He's not exactly fat at 38 years of age. He's been carrying far too much weight because he's been looked bored and basically shown no interest in several fights. There's lots of run-ins with different authorities away from the ring to do with failed drug tests, and he's provided adequate explanations for the abnormalities, which is why he's still allowed to challenge for the WBC belt, the WBC being the organisation that is strongest in its anti-drug stance. So let's look past that. He's a big old lump. He's a tough old lump. He's a strong old lump. He's got, I've no idea how thick his neck is, but it's basically somewhere north of about 20 inches. He's a solid lump. And Wilder will need to catch him and clean and catch him and hurt him. If Ortiz has changed his shape because he knows that he might need to go a few rounds to push Wilder into a territory that Wilder's unfamiliar with. Wilder basically, even though he's gone the distance once, and that was against Bermain Stiverne, who he then stopped ridiculously last time out, Wilder's never had to fight for 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 rounds. Wilder's never had to think about one single opponent in front of him. Now, you might find that hard to believe, seeing that this is his 7th defence, but I am telling you, hand on heart, Wilder has never had a tricky round, let alone a tricky fight. He has had a glorious run. The men he's beaten, and you think it's with him, it's more a case of the men he hasn't met during these 2 or 3 years as a heavyweight.
Yeah.
So he hasn't met Parker. He hasn't met Dillian White. He hasn't met AJ. He hasn't met Vlad. He hasn't met Yuri Fury. He hasn't met Tyson Fury. He hasn't met Alexander Povetkin. He hasn't met Kubrat Pulev. There's 7 men he hasn't met, and this is his 7th defence. It's the first defence against a man that stands head and shoulders above the other guys he's met. Head and shoulders. I doubt he's lost a round. I stand to be corrected. He might have taken a round off and let someone throw a couple of ineffective jabs at his shoulders. I am telling you, he's never been in a fight. Doesn't mean he can't have a fight, Lee, because he can definitely bang. Doesn't mean there's anything wrong with his guts or his heart. No suggestion. I'm just intrigued to see what happens when the guy doesn't fall over and when the guy's still throwing shots. I have a sneaky feeling Wilder might blow up late in a fight. We might be in for a shock here.
Right.
We might be in for a shock here. I just fancy Wilder on points with a lot of holding and an ugly, mauling fight. But it would not surprise me at all if Ortiz got to him.
Right, yeah, fascinating. Yeah, it'd be really interesting.
I mean, Wilder can bang, don't get me
yeah,
wrong.
Of course,
Wilder
yeah.
can really bang. He's, a, you know, he's, and if he hits a stand, an upright Anthony Joshua with that right hand, then it's going to be a tricky night for Joshua, if they should ever meet. However, what you have to understand is that the people in the Wilder business in America, his promoter and his management team, they actually think that a fight with AJ is about 90-10 in their advantage. They think they're the bigger fighter. They sell 73,000 less tickets.
Yeah.
They're not on pay-per-view.
No.
Joshua is.
Yeah.
But they somehow still think their fight is bigger. So this is the American thing with heavyweights. They just assume, because they've got an American heavyweight with a version of the world title, that for some reason, that's bigger than our guy. I mean, you've only got to look at the fights. You know, American press don't come over for Joshua fights. Well, they think he's fighting at, you know, a small hall. 80,000 people watching Joshua. 90,000 people. We've got a nation stopping. They've got a kid, Deontay Wilder, can walk down the high street in his hometown. Can't sell out a venue, period, anywhere. Can't sell out a venue in America. An indoor venue. I think they've done 7,000 tickets last week. 7,000 tickets. Joshua will have more than that. He's weighing.
I remember watching, I actually can't remember which... Joshua fight it was, but the one when Wilder was ringside on Sky with Tony Bellew, whichever one that was, I can't remember now.
Yeah.
But his eyes were wide, Buncey. He could not believe what he was looking at.
And that was in Manchester against Molina.
That's what it was. Yeah, it was that. And he just looked at it and he was kind of saying, "I want a." He was like almost saying it out loud. "I want a piece." Like, oh, wow, you know, I don't get this. This is unbelievable. So
and here's a thing for you. The tickets for that, the cheapest ticket for that is three times the price of the cheapest ticket this weekend for Ortiz and Wilder.
Right, yeah.
So it's not money. You can buy a $40 ticket.
Yeah.
Eddie Hearn would love to be able to sell a $40 ticket. A $40 ticket at an indoor venue, Eddie Hearn would sell 20,000 of them in about 3 seconds flat.
Yes, indeed, yeah.
No, this is the truth. Listen, there's very little in boxing that you can measure, okay? Because it's all about whether that jab would be better than that jab and that right hand would be better than that right hand. What you can measure are stats. And the raw stats say Joshua sells 90,000 and this kid struggles to do 7,000 or 8,000. Those are facts. The facts are that Joshua's cheapest seat is £80 and the cheapest seat for this is $40. Those are facts. And you cannot misinterpret facts. Facts are solid. One of them is 6'9", the other 6'6". Those are facts. What happens in the ring is open to debate. It's open to conjecture. It's open to opinion. That's no problem. But the facts about this attached to Wilder's success are there for everyone to see. And yet his promoters believe he's the biggest attraction. If he fought in the UK, he'd sell more tickets. I mean, that is as nuts as it gets.
Yeah, crazy. Unbelievable. So, a Deontay Wilder win, it might be a little bit scruffy.
Scrappy on points,
yeah.
Wilder.
Yeah. What I've done is I've put together your five by decision, Josh Taylor by a stoppage, Brook by stoppage, Kovalev by stoppage, and Wilder just a win. And that comes out at just under 8-1, Buncey.
Okay, that's not bad, is it?
Yeah, it's not bad at all. If you stick in Wilder by decision, it obviously boosts up quite a lot there. It goes up to about 35-1. So, interesting weekend. We're going to be glued to the TV with blurry, tired eyes come Sunday morning.
You are, son.
But thanks very much for that. Always a pleasure speaking to you, and we'll catch up very soon on the rest of the action around the world.
Lee, thanks, mate. Speak to you later.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.